To put it paradoxically, the subject is not subjective, but shows regular rational patterns in both thinking and willing. Leibniz dreamed of finding what he called a universal characteristic, or a means of replacing thinking by calculation.
If we had it, we should be able to reason in metaphysics and morals, in much the same way as in geometry and analysis. If controversies were to arise, there would be no more need of disputation between two philosophers than between two accountants.
Leibniz even began philosophical discussions with his colleagues by saying, "Come, let us calculate." So Leibniz dreamed of a universal language through which all subjects could communicate. Kant insisted that every human mind is constrained to think through one set of universal categories, and Hegel introduced an absolute subject that in knowing itself knows the whole of reality as one rational system. The German idealists acknowledged a distinction between the self as knower and the self as moral agent. The knower is a theoretical subject, whereas the moral agent is a practical being. But the idealists differed over which subject is more important. Kant in Fichte, for example, gave primacy to the moral agent, while Leibniz and Hegel exalted the knowing subject. A second theme running through idealist writings is the nature of knowledge and of reason. Idealists believe philosophy should start by examining how we know something, how the subject knows the object. Reality is understood to be the reality that's known by the mind or spirit. Hegel later criticized this emphasis on the role of the individual knower, but he also was heavily influenced by it. Kant limited reason by confining knowledge to what our understanding can know. He therefore denied that there can be any knowledge in metaphysics. Hegel agreed that the understanding is limited, but he turned the tables by insisting that reason is not limited. Hegel says reason, in the form of philosophy, is the highest type of knowledge. A third theme of idealism is the importance of religion. Again, the idealists had differing views. Kant conceived of a moral or rational faith. Schelling sought to show how the language of myth and the idea of divine disclosure is philosophically important. Hegel declared that the content of religion is the same as that of philosophy, God as truth.
The objects of philosophy, it is true, are upon the whole the same as those of religion. In both, the object is truth, in that supreme sense in which God, and God only, is the truth.
For Hegel, religious doctrine and ordinary experience are the two chief sources of philosophy. So the German idealist said that the self is the key to understanding all reality. Hegel had several disagreements with the idealists, though there can be no question of his indebtedness to Kant, Fichte, and Schelling. In time, Hegel became, for philosophy, what Beethoven was for music and Goethe was for literature. They were national heroes in one of Germany's greatest ages. By the time Hegel died during a cholera epidemic in 1831, his vast dialectical system included the principal themes of German idealism: reason, nature, spirit, freedom, history, art, morality, and religion. In fact, Hegel worked through more than 270 categories of thought to organize his comprehensive philosophical system. Starting with the most general concept of being, he broke each category into a triad of three components until he felt he'd touched on all of the salient ideas of philosophy. He synthesized all of these by subdividing philosophy into three parts: logic, philosophy of nature, and philosophy of mind. Each of these three parts preserves all that went before. Hegel called the entire process the progressive development of the idea, or the system of reason. The first part, logic, sets forth a whole system of categories needed to understand the nature of things. For Hegel, the term categories means a grasping of many items in a unity of thought. The second part, philosophy of nature, shows how these categories help us to comprehend the physical, chemical, and organic levels of the cosmos. The third part, the philosophy of mind, or spirit, brings us into the realm of what's possible only for self-conscious beings. This includes history, freedom, and the most distinctive manifestations of spirit: art, religion, and philosophy. The details of Hegel's earlier career are interesting because he was involved in a number of different activities. In 1788, he entered the Theological Seminary in Tübingen. His classmates included the philosopher Schelling and the romantic poet Hölderlin. Ironically, Hegel's record at graduation indicated that he was deficient in philosophy. A closer examination, however, shows that he didn't fare badly, but he just didn't take many courses. In 1793, Hegel became a tutor in the home of a prominent family in Bern. 3 years later, he accepted a similar post in Frankfurt. During these years, Hegel began to develop his own philosophy by completing a draft of a book called Logic. Then in 1800, at age 30, he was appointed at the University of Jena. There he and Schelling edited a philosophical journal. Hegel's several contributions to this journal showed his promise as an original thinker. While at Jena, he also published his first major work, The Phenomenology of Mind. It's a brilliant, fascinating, at times quite opaque odyssey of self-consciousness. He starts with the simplest knowledge of sense experience and ends with the total self-consciousness possessed by what he calls absolute spirit. To this day, the works continue to intrigue speculative philosophers and confound commentators. Hegel left Jena in 1807, and for about a year he edited a newspaper at Bamberg. In 1808, Hegel became headmaster of a school in Nuremberg, where he stayed for 8 years.